Realms of Peril and Glory will begin after these short messages.
Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
We'd like to thank our patrons, Klingster, Cora, and Stuttering GM, for their support in making this series possible. If you'd like to join them and get ad-free listening, bonus shows, and early access to all of these interviews, then head over to patreon.com/lightandtragic. Welcome to Making the Game, Realms of Peril and Glory's interview show. All of these episodes premiere on Patreon first, so if you want to hear some great interviews with fabulous creators from around the tabletop space, then head over there now and check it out, patreon.com/lightandtragic. This week, I'm interviewing Fiona Howitt of What Am I Rolling? If you want to find Fiona and her various projects, you can check the link in the podcast description. I highly recommend it. Welcome one and welcome all back to Realms of Peril and Glory. It is so wonderful to be here with you today. My name, of course, is Zachary Fortis Gom, and I am the Game Master and other various things on the show. Today, I am speaking with the fantastic Fiona Howitt of the What Am I Rolling podcast. Hello, Fiona.
Hello. Hello. How are you, Zach? Nice to be here.
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's a quite late night on a school night, but you know what? I'm here to talk about RPGs, and I'm here to talk about stuff with you. So it's already going really well, so I'm loving this.
There's nothing more important in life than RPGs, even school nights.
Agreed. I would... Who needs work, really, when you've got storytelling?
Precisely. And, you know, I recall we on a, I think it was a Monday night for Vale. Our finale recording was 5.5 hours long.
Ooh.
And it went to midnight. It was awful. But it was great. We loved it. But also the most brutal recording session of your life.
Yeah, I totally get that.
I want to talk a bit about your show, What Am I Rolling? Mm-hmm. Could you... just give the listeners a brief idea about what the show is before we kick into things.
What Am I Rolling is a twice monthly RPG one-shot podcast where I usually take some brand new players or groups of friends or anyone that's vaguely available, depending on schedules, and we go through a brand new system or a new RPG rules and stuff and just do a one-shot of that system. And these can take place over a single episode, or it can be up to, I think we've gone up to 6 episodes at some point.
Nice.
But yeah, what's great about it is that, you know, if you see a system you like, you can just drop in, listen to it. And then if you don't want to listen to the next one, totally fine. You can go back and listen to others. There's no order or anything like that. You can just choose and pick, which I really like about it.
It's great. I have done that when I've been like looking for, I'm like, oh, I'm about to play this system. Has anyone done a playthrough of it? And I'll look on your feed. I'm like, ah, yes. And
yep.
I'll listen. And I'm like, now I know how to play.
Exactly that. Yeah.
So yes, I would highly recommend if you enjoy TTRPGs, which I certainly hope you do if you've tuned into this episode.
This will be really awkward if at this point you go, oh, tabletop RPG. No.
Oh, I've been... Totally. No, thank you. But if you do, please head over and check out What Am I Rolling, because it's wonderful stuff that you really should check out. So now I'm going to grill you about TTRPGs.
Okay, I'm ready.
So again, you've played huge quantities of games. Do you? Mm-hmm. I imagine you don't have a running tally.
Not particularly.
Totally
no.
Fair. I would not expect you to. I was curious if you did. Mm-hmm. But you've played so many, and I'm wondering if there are any in particular that have stood out for you, mm-hmm. that might not be as well known, but you really want people to check out.
Mm. So the one that always comes to my mind when I think of this, just because it was such a great one-shot to run, was a game called In Name Only, which is by Doug Lewandowski and Jack Rosetree. And essentially, it can be a high fantasy setting or anything like that, but the idea is that your real in-life name dictates what skills you have. So for Fiona, that's I've got 5 skills, and that would be fire magic, ice magic, oversized weapons, nature magic, and archery. And when you ever use any of those skills in a certain scene or anything like that, you take the number of your letters away from 8, and that will be your modifier. And then you just roll a d20 and add the modifier to it. And then everything else is just a straight roll. And what I liked about it is that then you create a character who may have, like, say, if you've only got 3 letters in your name, then you'll have fewer talents, but you're very good at them, or you're more of a jack of all trades, where you have up to 8 talents, but not very good at any of them.
Oh,
and the reason I like it as well is that, so you have your players, and they are named characters, and they can, and the idea of, certainly with the one shot we ran, it was the idea that they got picked by, obviously, like a wizened old woman's like, come to this place, and so they went and they became these people. But what I loved about the setting was that none of the minor characters are named. They're sort of like the town crier's daughter or the baker, all that sort of thing. As soon as the players give them a name, and it's always on the players to give names, they become an actual real person. And the reason I started to say this, because I really like it, was that they had to go and save someone from this town. There was like a monster, or they'd done a pact or something like that. And it was very sort of a never-ending story where, like, people were using their memories to grant wishes and they couldn't remember stuff and all that sort of thing. They get there, and the person that sort of sacrificed themselves, they saved them, but they weren't waking up. And one of the players just went, I know what to do. And they said, I go over to this person and I just go, Fiona, you need to wake up. And I remember, because I'd had a really hard day, I'd had a job rejection, all that sort of thing, and everyone exploded into screams, because obviously we didn't see it coming, and you hear me burst into tears on the recording.
Oh my God.
Because I did not expect that, because obviously as a GM, sometimes you're just, you know, you are putting players in the right places, they're the perfect scene partners, and you're just helping molding stuff, and then suddenly I was brought in. And it completely flat-footed me, but it was such an emotional moment. I edited it down quite a bit, because I think we had to pause for like 5 minutes whilst we were all sort of like so excited that this thing happened, but also we were all crying with joy that it happened. And I always remember that quite fondly, this in name only, as, again, very simple system, but we had such an incredible story with it, such an incredible moment out of it. So definitely would recommend that game.
I'm writing
for sure.
That down.
Yeah.
We roll through so many systems. I gotta take every recommendation I can get.
Yeah, no, it's a really good, easy one to learn as well. And like, I can't remember off the top of my head, but difficulties were like you have to get over 10. That is the main success. And if there's something else that's a little bit harder, I think it's 15. But that's it. Like, it's the difficulty is so straightforward. There's not like each individual challenge is like, oh, it's a 12 or anything like that. It's just 10 is for normal, and then a little bit difficult, or using something with magic, I think, is a 15, and you just go from there. So
I love
so
a straightforward,
straightforward
game, like a game where the rules are minimal. Like, I understand complications in games. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes to get a better experience, things need to be a little bit more complicated. But I think most of the time, the less complicated, the better. Mm-hmm. Well, I say that. Some people would probably disagree with me, because Some people are really crunchy and they like the crunch. They want, that's what they enjoy out of their games.
Definitely. But yeah.
I don't know if you are the same. I feel I'm more geared towards the role play social side of things. That doesn't necessarily mean not combat, but that's definitely what I enjoy more, I think.
Yeah. No, definitely. And speaking of, so not necessarily crunchy games, but ones that do involve lots of prep, the other game that does come to my mind that I really did enjoy in the end was Sleepaway by Jay Dragon. We did it as a collaboration, and it's the idea is that you are playing summer staff counselors at a summer camp, and you have to protect the kids from something called the Lindworm, which, you know, you have all those horror camp stories and all that sort of thing. But the Lindworm is anything you can make it of. And there's a great mechanic where nobody role plays as a Lindworm. You ask the Lindworm if they would like to play, and then somebody will pick it, and it's a card deck, and you all that sort of thing. It was very hard to do it online because obviously we were doing this during the pandemic.
Yes,
it encourages you to do it in person, and then you have like a court board and put it together. But we did it online. We used like a Miro board and all that sort of thing. And what we got out of it in the end, because that is an interesting mechanic where you, I think it's based on Dream Askew, which is that system where it's all about tokens. And you, like, if you just do a normal move, then nothing happens. But if you take a weak move, you get a token. To do a strong move, you give a token. So you have to do lots of weak moves in order to do strong moves. And it's all conversational. And so the improviser in me was like, this is amazing. Once we got past the prep and setting up all the characters and all that sort of thing, you know, for me, that's sort of the crunchy bit, because I was like, I don't know if it's going to work online. And then we went round and we did it. And again, now that I think about it, the ending of that, I also cried in that, because it was just such a beautiful moment. And that one especially, that was a GM-less one. So everyone got a chance to play and stuff. So yeah, I think that one was, for me, the crunchiest game in the sense of like, there was a lot of prep and a lot of translating it onto online. But I really enjoyed the role play we got out of that was great. I think all Jay Dragon games are very similar. Like Wonder Home is the latest one. Mm-hmm. Which I've yet to try, but again, similar sort of thing, giving tokens, taking tokens, conversational style, and resolving things without necessarily hit points or attacks or anything like that. So, yeah.
That's amazing. I love hearing about people's experiences, because it's always so joyful when you see someone talking about this excellent time they've had in a game.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's been some conversation or research about how the memories you make while role-playing, like your character moments, your brain codes them as your memories.
Absolutely.
Like, which is, and you can, I feel like you can tell that when you talk to people about it, because they like, you don't say like, oh, my character did this and then that. You're like, no, I, you know, swashbuckled with the Nightmare King, and you know, it makes it so personal, and I just love that about games, is like giving people that.
And I think it's interesting to talk about that as an adult as well, when quite a lot of our hobbies and stuff, I'd say this, you know, obviously 10-20 years ago, it was like, oh, D&D is for nerds, you know, and obviously now it's cool to like D&D, because obviously there's all these streamers and all that sort
cool
of thing.
We're cool now.
I know. My 17-year-old self is like, what? But I guess what's interesting, I always love running one-shots. I always love playing in any RPG game, because like you said, it's that weird sort of immersive theatre thing that you get out what you put into it, and it's unique. It's like you have those "you had to be there" moments. Like,
yes.
Like the thing that comes to my mind instantly as soon as you said what happened to you was that we again in a D&D game, playing myself is just easier, but we were trying to find somebody who my character had an interest in, and got lost in this festival, get to the pub, my friend goes away, and we knew this person could change their shape. My friend comes back, and then the DM started playing the friend, and everyone around the table was like, oh God, it's her. But I was like, I have to play this as if I don't realize there's any change. And we did. And I just remember that whole scene, because I was talking to this person, you know, exposing my feelings about why I wanted to find blah, 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 blah. And then they went, and then my friend comes back, and I go, oh no. Like, it was a big sort of, I don't know, reveal, but it was just so cool, because it just, the way it happened was so natural. And we all really enjoyed that moment, because we're all like, that was such a cool in-person immersive moment. And I think we miss that quite a bit from, I guess, I know it's different playing online and in person, but running any RPG game and getting players into it, when they might be not very into role play, for example, or they're a bit nervous, that's totally fine. But it's that you know, if, as long as you like say, what do you want to do? And they say it in the third person, or they just give it a go. And then afterwards they go, that was so much fun. That is the aim I always have in my fingers. As long as they have fun and have that unique experience where they can go, you never guess what I played. Bloody D&D or that RPG set. And it, you know what? It wasn't always about maths, you know? So.
That's the thing. It is so joyful to give someone that experience. I think that's what I get out of being a game master is giving people that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're similar on RPG is that it's not worth it if we're not having fun.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like the show is great and we want it to be good and we want people to like it, but if we're not having fun doing it, no one else is going to enjoy listening to it.
Exactly.
And so that's always our number one priority is giving the players the best experience they can.
Out of interest, I'm going to ask you a question then on this. I know. I've taken this format.
This has never happened before.
Taking a format and turning it around. So obviously, you do the editing for your show as well, and so you have to listen back to yourself. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had it when you run a game and you know the other people have had fun, but maybe you've gone, oh, I messed this up, all this, and you get that sort of Do you ever listen back and then listen and you go, actually, I did a very competent job?
Yeah, actually, yes. There are a number of times, especially early on in Vale for our listeners, which is our first season. I'm sure I have said that. But where I listen, I'm like, oh, just slow down. Just stop worrying about getting the story out and like just let things go. And as I settle into the rhythm of things, there are still moments where I'm like, shut up, Zach, and let other people talk.
Take a moment, I found it's interesting. Like, I've really enjoyed doing stuff online and recording online. And maybe it's just because I've done a lot of online improv and stuff. And whilst I can do it on stage, I find there's something scary about suddenly becoming the villain in front of, like, your friends around a small table. Whereas online, I feel a little bit separate from that. So I can pause and take because they'll ask me a question, and in my head it feels like it's been 30 minutes. When reality, like you said, it's been like 2 seconds. But the fact I'll watch myself back, which is very, very egotistical, because I'll watch you back on Zoom. But I'm like, wow, I look like I'm really in character, but really I'm going, say this thing, and you know the thing I say doesn't make sense really. But then go, ooh, mysterious, and they're like, but yeah, this is my big advice really when I record anything or when people want to like, what should I do as a DM? Do record yourself and then watch it back and listen back, because it sounds dreadful. Like, people don't like the sound of their own voice or like seeing themselves, but actually, it shows me, and I'm like, oh, I did an all right job. Like, it wasn't like it wasn't the car crash. It was like like you said, next time, slow it down a bit. Let the players fill in the gaps or you know, wait to be asked or something like that, you know, if they're struggling. So I think there's a lot to gain out of, even if you just record your voice. But I think there's something amazing watching yourself back online and just seeing you, like, think about stuff. You're like, okay, next time, do this. But it's, I've just found doing it on Zoom or doing it via any sort of video conferencing platform has actually really helped my DMing as a result, so.
You know what? I started DMing or GMing online. I prepped my first session for being in person, and then suddenly we were all locked down and the game never went ahead, and I did so much prep for that game that I look back on now. I've still got the notes. So pointless, all the prep. Not because the game got canceled, but because I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I prepped every scenario and I didn't leave any room for improvisation. I think what I learned then going online and doing things and not having to have people right in front of me where they can see me flailing as easily is to just let it go, and like you'll come up with things on the fly and trust your instincts. I don't know if you found that at all.
I think the great benefit of doing it online, and if you've got access to PDFs, you can be like, one moment, rather than I love RPG books, as we've shown before. Like, I've got like the 1,000-year-old vampire book, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Like, I have so many physical books, and I love physical books, but my god, carrying them all to an in-person place and then going, let me just check, it's not in this book, it's not in, it's like, it's like, and I get it, not everyone likes PDFs, and I totally understand that, but it is, I have so much more space here. Obviously, I've got, I'm also mic'd up okay, so that, because I don't project well when I'm in person, but yeah, it's I definitely feel a lot more comfortable online. I actually, speaking of though, I did recently do an in-person one for my other podcast, and I was so nervous for it. And we recorded it, and I listened back to it, and again, that sort of thing would go, oh, it's fine. But and there was a lot of more stuff I was playing off the fly because the reactions were much quicker, because obviously we were enjoying what was happening and stuff. So I guess the pros and cons, obviously, is online you get a better streamed experience perhaps, but in person you can easily, you know, go off each other and like talk to each other a little bit better, and you can get the verbal and non-verbal cues and stuff. So it's there are benefits to both, but I definitely, for DM prepping or practice, I guess I 100% recommend doing it online. And also, I'm sure you've done this as well, Zach, is that don't worry about all the tech. If you just for God's sake.
No, that's all I do is worry about
the tech. No, but like, it's like, you know, you set them up, you've got the mics, etc. They're wearing headphones, hooray. You know, sometimes they don't, and you're like, why don't you have a headphone? God damn it. Or headphones, even.
Why can I hear myself echo 5 times from 5 different machines?
But like I only use maps when I need to, and otherwise theatre of the mind. Like, I love the idea of music. I absolutely do. It's atmosphere. I need to employ like a DJ to do it. You know, I don't have time to do it. Like, I'm focusing on what people are saying. I'm not like spinning discs and going,
I've got to go to my tension playlist. And now,
and then you go, and a goblin's appeared. Oh, but I'm voicing it. And you know, it's just like,
and the goblin music. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the fact we can do this. But I think if you were going to do that, like in a stream game, get somebody else to look at it and get them to interpret it, and have that co-DM or whoever it is, or co-GM, and like you're in charge of music. See what you can do. Like, you get so much more out of it. Have you
ever done a co-GM experience?
I don't think so. I don't think so off the top of my head. I think I'd love to do it. We've discussed on the other podcast. Sorry, I keep mentioning the other ones.
No, please, plug away. Brilliant. Plug away.
I will. So during lockdown, and we were talking about this before, like, so obviously I didn't have enough to do. So I was like, I'm going to start a weekly D&D podcast. but this one, because from that, what happened there was that I obviously have all the D&D books, but didn't read them. And during lockdown, I stopped reading. I used to read on the tube and stuff, and I just couldn't read for pleasure, but I could read nonfiction because I could make notes. So I got my friend involved, and we just started setting each other, read this chapter, read this bit, and then we'll discuss why it's interesting. In the DM's guide, they talk about the gods aren't real or something like that. I can't remember the exact phrasing of it, but everyone has a card at the table, and the original GM1 will start, and at any point they can go, my turn, and then they switch, and everyone has a go at GMing. And I love that concept that everyone is involved with something. Like, you'd prepare something, a little something, but as soon as you use your token, that's it. And then everyone has to have a go, and then it resets again. And I just think that would be such a cool thing to just try out. I'd love to try out again. I don't know if it would be better in person or online. I guess in person, because then you can actually like physically like, here's a token, whereas online people be like, oh, it's my turn. But I was talking about it with other people, and the people were saying like, oh, I would be too nervous to interrupt something. And I was like, no, I'd be waiting for the big villain speech, and I'm like, my turn. and take it from them. But it's just preparing enough to go off it, and everyone has that buy-in. I love that idea, but unfortunately, yet to do a co-DM or multi-DM session. But no, sorry, I completely lied about that. Sorry, I just
You lied to me.
I know, I'm so sorry, Zachary. Please don't kick me off the podcast.
It's okay, I'll forgive you now.
Sorry, one of the other projects I am working on, which I'm going to name drop now, but it's not going to come out.
You have enough, right?
I know. So my friend Dee, they and a couple of the other people they know was like, right, we are forever GMs.
Yes.
What about we just do a D&D campaign from levels 1 to 20, but each of us take a certain number of levels? So we've started that, and we've created the world ourselves. We've even got... I've got it here. Sorry, going off tangent completely. We even drew the map.
I love it.
And then one of the player's partners made it into a dice bag for us. So we've got an actual world map.
That's sick.
All that sort of thing. So we're currently on level 3 just now, but the idea is that we're recording it, and then we get to level 5, and then the next person takes over. And we don't know where the story is going until... And Dee is taking the last level, level 20, and they just keep copious amounts of notes. So it is... as soon as we're like, oh, and this happened, they're like... interesting. You're like, oh no, all this stuff's going to come back to him. But yeah, so that is an ongoing thing we're having, but that is already set as in like, we are co-DMing the story, but it's, these are your levels.
Have you divvied it out? Because obviously you're meant to spend kind of more time in levels at certain, have you kind of divvied it up? So when, by the time you get to like, I don't know, 16th level, it's just one person for 16th level and then so on and so forth. Or is it kind of, I'll take 1 to 5, you take 6 to 10, so on and so forth. Yeah,
so there's 5 of us, and so 4 of us are taking like the first 19 levels, and then D, who's the organizer of it, is doing the 20th level, and we're just going to see how we go for that. And yeah, because I think I'm banging in the middle, so I'm going to have to deal with 2 persons' lot of amazing DMing, panic, and then leave something behind for the other 2.
So what will you be dealing with then? What levels are you dealing with in that?
I believe it will be sort of, I think it'll be like levels 11 to 15, I think is what I'm dealing with.
So you're going to get some beef in that. That's
I'm looking forward to it. We did a lot of like one shots to test out you know, what our DM styles were, and we're all very different, and that was really nice to try out. You know, I'm just playing in different games and stuff was just really interesting, and I'm like, okay, note for later, do this and using the world we created as well. Through we actually created the world through Microscope, which is another game, an RPG game by Ben Robbins or something like that, where you basically have like a Trello board and you start making events, and then the next person goes, okay, and in this event this thing happens and it's dark, and you're like, oh, okay. But this event happens and it's light, you know. I recommend it. Yeah, Microscope. I can't remember his last name, but it's Microscope by Ben, probably Robbins, I'm gonna get it wrong, but yeah. Anyways, that was a huge tangent to say.
No,
yes,
this is,
and
this
no.
This show's all about tangents. We're filling time.
Fair enough.
I brought up the co-GMing thing because I don't know if you know, but in our first season, I don't do any of the NPC voices live.
Oh, cool! No, I didn't know that.
I have someone who just does them, and that was just something we were like, let's try this, because it's myself and James who were partnering, but we wanted the first season to introduce to both of us, because it's going to be both of our show. But
of course.
But so I had to figure out how to do that. Highly recommend it if you ever want to share a brain with someone and find out what that's like. Please do it, and also open yourself up to insane amounts of chaos.
Yeah. You can't be precious about your decisions. It's like in improv, they always say you always have in your scene 1,000 funerals, because your ideas, you're like, here's my idea, and it goes, no. And you go, okay, my idea has died.
the example that I always tell people about of like how things just totally spun out of control with that is, we had a character in the first episode called Pine Silver, who is just a wood elf, who is really just meant to be there to like give some color and like to pass on some information. That was the extent of that character's life, really. And I think the note I gave was like, yeah, eager to please and and kind, friendly. I think those were the notes. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I got this Kiwi wood elf who is like, got some issues with his dad, and like is like, I want you to be my friend. And like everyone immediately had very strong feelings about Pine Silver,
understandably so. Yeah.
And so I was like, well, I guess this guy is a main thread of the plot now and is going to appear every other episode, which we had not planned.
Nope. I love that though.
That's fine. And that's where the joy comes from.
Exactly. It's just like, okay, now it's like, how do I fix this? But it's fixing in the nice way of going, like, how do I continue on with this without going, no, and throwing it, you know, into the waste basket for forgotten NPCs that you thought were cool, you know, so.
Yes, precisely.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Right, I'm going to move on from the tangent.
Do it.
This is one of the things I most definitely want to get to on my notes, is you have played some solo RPGs.
I have played some solo RPGs, yes.
Which I've never done.
Really?
And would very much like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to tell me about your experiences with them, and tell me why I shouldn't be afraid.
why would you be afraid? I think it's, for me, it's very interesting, because I guess doing a solo RPG for a podcast, or certainly for some sort of content medium, right? Mm-hmm. When I approached it, because I was like, the real reason I started it was I was running out of content because nobody was free. That is the main reason. But then I was recommended, and I always talk about this particular RPG because it's the one that gets brought up the most when anyone talks about solo RPGs. But there is an RPG called The Beast by Alexandra Sontoska. And the idea is that for over 21 days, you have a pack of cards, and you take the cards and you get a prompt, and then you write in your diary what you feel about it. And then at the end of the 21 days, you have a choice to make, and it ends. And I'm not going to spoil it. You can listen to my version of it, obviously, on my podcast. But the premise is you are in a relationship with a beast, this alien, unknowable force, and it's documenting your relationship with it over the 21 days. And there'll be very simple, straightforward prompts. And for me, I was like, well, I don't mind having a go at it, because it'd been talked about on stuff like Shut Up and Sit Down had done it, and as a sort of review, and they're like, it's an interesting one, and I can concur, it's an interesting one, because there are more cards than there are days, so it does change up. But I will say, from my run through of that, I got off lightly. I looked at the other cards at the end. I was like, "Ooh, I'm glad I did not have to answer those on the podcast. I might have had to edit them." But for that, I just literally got the prompt, would read it aloud, and then verbalize what I said. Mm. And when I interviewed Alexandra, it was very interesting, because she said, "You've hacked my game," because the idea is that you don't tell anyone your experience, and then you burn or get rid of the journal in some way, because it's supposed to be private. And you've done that. You've changed the game, and that's really interesting. And that's how I see doing solo RPGs. It's a very private thing. for you to do. Time that you spend with yourself. And there are so many different solo RPGs out there. There's obviously, I've done ones about letter writing. So that's like Quill, for example, where you roll some dice and you see how well your letter's been received. And fun fact, none of my letters got well received. You know, you got stuff like... what's it called? There's the one with the spaceship with Jenga Tower. So like get very complicated things like that where you're surviving with this alien force getting in. Quite a lot of the solo RPGs are about isolation and loneliness and stuff. So it can be quite hard, but I don't mind it because I see it as a way to reflect on stuff and a way to sort of like think things through and then take that time to debrief from the characters. Mm. So what I started doing during lockdown is... I did a workbook called The Artist Way by Julia Cameron, which is hilarious. It's a 12-week program, as she says in quotation marks, where it unblocks your creative pores. it's a very interesting book, but the one thing I took away from it was that every week, block out some time for you and your inner child to do something creative. Now, that could be going to a museum, could go... to church was her example, go for a walk or something, but it's something that you have to do by yourself and it's something that you really must love and do, and you don't move the time and you don't change the time. It's got to be minimum of like 2 hours, same time every week. So I just thought I'll just start doing RPG one-shots, solo one-shots on that time, and it was very relaxing actually and very interesting to do. So I highly recommend doing them, and obviously, like I said, there's so many different varieties of them. You get the ones which are interesting content, like The Beast, but also you get stuff like A Thousand-Year-Old Vampire, which you can create whole characters with. There's Artifact was the other one that I played recently by, I think it's Jack Harrison, I think, where it's you create a sentient magical item, and it's the story about how that is passed down from keeper to keeper and what happens to those keepers with your, you know, do you corrupt them because you're too good or you're too bad? And throughout the ages, it doesn't have to be medieval per se, it could go all the way to the future, which I loved as a concept. And again, being able to verbalize it out loud, I found that more rewarding than, because I just write really slowly or type really slowly, I just find it just interesting because I just like the sound of my own voice, I don't know, but and then capturing it and then listening back to it was really interesting because I'd be like, oh, so I felt like this at this time, or oh, I thought this at this time. And yeah, it just makes it very interesting for podcast content. I mean, there is something cynical to say like you're only doing this for content, which is true, but I do gain a lot out of it as I sort of treat myself to a game, if you see what I mean. So
that's the tricky thing with games, because the majority of the games that I play now are recorded because of the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
But it can serve two masters. It can be fun and for you and also happen to be content. It's the nature of the oh, I hate the word grind, but the grind.
Yeah.
I dislike those kinds of businessy hype terms that encourage people to run themselves into the ground.
Blue sky thinking, pushing that envelope. Let's
envelope.
Some of the solo RPGs we do are about isolation and stuff, but there are ones that are not. So the one I have done recently was one called Field Guide to Memories, who I can't remember who wrote that. There's two lovely American Korean folks doing that. And that what was interesting was that was over a month and you'd got a prompt. And the idea was that you were an expert in cryptozoology. So the idea of cryptids being in the world, but you never seen them. So that idea of seeing like Bigfoot and all that sort of thing. But your mentor had gone missing and had been missing for 5 years and has been declared dead. And then the fallout from that and how do you deal with it? And it was very interesting because obviously it wasn't a sad game. It wasn't a game about isolation, but there's lots of turning points in it because you discovered stuff about your mentor that maybe you weren't comfortable with. Because again, that idea of putting someone up on a pedestal, that the idea of the age of celebrity or cult of personality, that sort of thing. And I will say my mum, she's great because she listens to every episode. She gives me constructive feedback. I know. But it's so funny because we got to the end of that and she said, wow, you really didn't enjoy the ending to that. And I thought that was really interesting that she picked up on that. Because the way the story went, it wasn't how I would envisioned it. But I got to the end and we had a really interesting talk about it. And we wouldn't have been able to do that if I'd just written it all down and kept it in a journal. And that one is part of... there's a new sort of rise in these things called keepsake RPGs. Mm-hmm. So the idea that you write the journal and you draw the pictures and all that sort of thing, like a bullet journal, and then you keep it afterwards. And I find that really a fascinating thing, because for me, I'm terrible at bullet journaling or anything like that, because yes. As soon as I do something lovely, it's like, next page, brah, rubbish, get rid of it and stuff like that. But I'd recommend, it's like I said, Field Guide to Memory. If you look up on Twitter, so many people put up their beautiful, beautiful journals that they'd done. And I was like, I'm just going to verbalize this out loud, because my words are pretty.
Well, you've heard it here, folks. You need to go check that out.
You do.
And try some solo RPGs. I have purchased Thousand-Year-Old Vampire, and yes. That is kind of in my schedule to do at some point in the next kind of few months.
With that one as well, because I think some people get put off a bit by the prep for Thousand-Year-Old Vampire. We talked about it off the stream just now, but Dicebreaker do a really good, interesting introduction like to it. You don't have to watch all of it. I would just watch the first bit of it and then play it yourself, in case you're worried about spoilers or anything like that. But with Thousand-Year-Old Vampire by Tim Hutchings, there are so many different ways you can play it. There's like, once you've played it once through, you can do it this way and this way and this way. And I just, it's such a beautiful book. And I know he's got another supplement coming out soon as well.
There's something coming out. I remember, I don't think it was a supplement though.
Oh, was it not?
No, I remember, sorry.
No, this is what happens when you get RPG people in the room. You're like, ooh, what book? A new book? A new game?
Yeah. I'm literally doing this live.
And as well as the fact, I'll vamp, but I will say it as well, because obviously I have the book here. I bought the physical book because I had it on a stream to play through, and it is gorgeous, but equally the PDF was equally good in that. And yeah, I love the mechanic of that as just rolling, so a D10 and D6, and then taking the results away from each other. And if it's a positive number, you move forward in the book. If it's a negative number, you move back. So you can never predict what's happening. But And again, you can't predict how long your game is as well. Again, I won't go into the big mechanics here, but it could literally, you can get to like the end of the page is like page 88 and it goes, this is the end of your story. Or you could just die in the middle of it and you're like, what? No! You know, and I just, yeah. As a result, that's not how my story ends. So
I've just looked it up. It is a companion volume.
There you go.
I believe he goes at great lengths to say, but this is not a Thousand-Year-Old Vampire. It's something different.
Yeah. And yeah. Which is totally fair, I think.
And it's still coming soon.
Yes, I think, I don't know if there's a Kickstarter or something for it. But anyway, I mean, check out Thousand. I mean, he's done quite a few other things as well. I think he's also done Everything is Dolphins was the other RPG, which I have not played it. I'm curious about it, though. So.
Also one called You're a Fucking Butterfly.
Yeah.
Habitation of the Stone Giant Lord and The Oracle.
Hmm. So a nice wide range if you're interested in those. But yeah, The Thousand-Year-Old Vampire is the most recent one to date that he's done, apart from the supplement.
I'm excited to play. Okay, so I'm going to move on yet again to another topic. So I want to talk about, obviously you have played many, 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 many game systems. And I want to know if there are any mechanics or things that are done just a little bit differently or quite differently in other game systems that people might not have experienced before that actually worked really well for you and have stuck with you.
I think for me, anything that has a card prompt is my favorite kind of game. I don't mind dice rolling too much. The issue is that people get kind of caught up with the numbers. They'll go like a 13. And you go, I don't know. For me, I try and roll as little as possible because I've got, you know, it's when you're running games, you've got not only the story in your head, you're trying to, you know, it's trying to get cats through HR, which is on fire, like you're herding them. It's like, come on, let's go. I love card prompts or anything like that. So the game that comes to mind here is The Quiet Year by Avery Alder.
And I'm so good at remembering this.
It's just off my head because I like to credit those people who have made them and stuff rather than just like, yeah, this.
Absolutely. But, I just wouldn't have been able to remember. Your recall is excellent.
I guess it's just, I don't know, I guess because I talk about it so much. But the what's cool about The Quiet Year is that it's self-described as a cartography RPG, and you have a big map in front of you and you start drawing out the landscape. And the idea is that a big disaster has happened, whether it's a post-apocalyptic thing or you were just traveling and you've now made a community, and you have a year before the frost shepherds come and everything is destroyed. And so you go through the whole of summer, you go through the whole of winter, and you, the cards are based on it's again called the Oracle, and they're based on the different suits and stuff. So you could pick, there's two options on each card, but as soon as you draw, I think it's the King of Spades, I want to say, as soon as you print it, that's the end of the game. And we had it when we did our playthrough, it was the first day of winter, and we were like, that's it. We were kind of shocked because it just suddenly happened. But it was that sort of thing where we told the story, like this community, and then things were going missing and wrong, and then suddenly people came back and everything was destroyed. And it was just so sudden, and it just really put it home how poignant that was. And it was a really good story that we put into, like, silly in places as well, but it was that when you putting stuff together, when you're collaborating, like, not all RPG stories have to be like happy-go-lucky and stuff. A lot of it is obviously comedy. We're very bad at, like, we want to be serious adventurers, but usually it's like Monty Python-esque, right? So,
it's like whenever people play Blades in the Dark, you always end up being like goofy and.
I love Blades in the Dark. But yeah, every time I play, I always like, oh, I'm gonna be the boxer or the pugilist or whatever, and then it usually goes, okay, you fight them. I'm like, here I go, going to punch you, like, and then obviously miss, and I'm like, well, shit, because that's usually just me. But yeah, Blades in the Dark, that Dustfall, that whole setting is so
such
cool.
Such a good setting.
Oh, like the steampunk Victoriana place with ghosts and a barrier. I was just, yeah, everything about it is just such an interesting, like, perfect.
I had a home game of Blades that I was actually playing in, shockingly. Where I think our interpretation was that the true evil of the world was capitalism, so our characters just became hardcore late stage capitalists that just eviscerated everyone for all their money. We we had to stop some counselor from voting in something. We're like, we will eviscerate her in the press, and it's like it was.
Yes.
And we made like a sandwich shop, and we put drugs in sandwiches so people would get hooked on them.
Well, there was a kebab shop in ours, so yeah, we had similar.
We made a theme park in our backyard that was like. We became Disney. We became Disney.
I love it. Yes.
I don't want to shit talk Disney, but also I'm shit talking Disney.
No, do it. Dismaland. Do a Banksy on it. Yes, absolutely.
We made Dismaland in the backyard of an abandoned manor house.
Yep.
To represent late stage capitalism, because, you know, that's what happens in Blades in the Dark sometimes.
I'm hoping to run that soon for the What Am I Rolling? Because I just, again, it's a really interesting system, all the D6s and stuff, but the setting of it is so cool and so rich to play in. So, and yeah, live all that. So it's good.
Shout out to, I believe it's John Harper and Sean Nittner, or is it just John Harper?
Evil Hat Productions is what I was going to go for, but yes, absolutely. Oh.
We've just done Agon, which is another
game. The ancient Greek where you have to say your name and
exactly.
So much fun. I want to play that.
I wish I could have been more a part of it, but I wasn't part of the game. It was our first one where I was like, I'm going to let someone else GM and I'm not going to play. I'm just going to be the producer here on the call to be like, good job, guys. But what if I played?
Yeah, no, I watched the Icebreaker briefly for that bit at the beginning, and I just, it's just so, you could tell people like, this is a lot of fun. I get just say my name and then, oh yeah, absolutely. I 100%. Sorry, I'm now very excited because I love it too.
I get very excited about games as well. Please don't feel like you can't express your love for games.
It's true, but then my words go, oh, yes, great, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
So are there any more mechanics that you get come to mind that you might want to mention?
Cool. Just because I have my list of various things, it has just come up. I think my favorite, and I'm sure you've probably spoken about it before, like Grant Howitt has obviously done so many like one-page RPGs. Again, if you're that sort of person who goes, I want to start DMing, but D&D is not scary, but it's intimidating.
It's big,
and you have players who are like, I know all of D&D because I've read the Monster Manual. You're like, idiots. Any Grant Howitt game is amazing. Like, I'm a big fan of Goblin Quest because that's very much like Paranoia, where you have clones of goblins that just die. But I think my favorite one-page one-shot has to be Jason Statham's Big Vacation, because
now I saw this on the feed.
Yes.
Please tell me more.
I will. So, Jason Statham, in case you don't know who he is a big...
How can you not?
You never know. He's not as big as I think he was, but anyway,
he's in Fast and the Furious. Everyone's seen that.
He is, but some people might not have seen that. Anyway, I know. But Jason Statham is like an East End UK film star who's done lots of things. He's ridiculous. If you look him up on Wikipedia, he was like an Olympic diver. Ridiculous. Anyway, he's on holiday, and you, as the entourage, have to make sure that Jason has a good time. Now,
I didn't realize you were playing the entourage.
Oh, yes, because as Statham Master, you get to ruin everyone else's stuff. It basically, you do lots of rolling and stuff for each individual scene. I usually do it as like a bank holiday, essentially. Yeah. So you've got stuff to do. And it's a great little line because every scene starts with Jason waking up. Yeah, it's like a montage of Jason waking up, kicking down the door and demanding something from his entourage. And the mechanic I'll talk about, because I think that's the interesting thing. There's two parts to it. So one is there's four tracks that Jason has. It's like sad, dead, in prison, and angry, I think was the other one. And obviously, if you fill them up, something bad will happen. Like the sad one is that he cries and then rings his mum, who is played by Helen Mirren, to come and get him out of his holiday.
Well, that's who his mum is in Fast and the Furious, of course. So
Makes sense. But the mechanic is every time you have certain things, so you'll be playing like the bodyguard and you'll have stuff like, these hands are weapons. These weapons are also weapons. And if you justify like a senior, I'm going to do this, but I'm using my hands as also weapons. They'll be like, okay, here is 7 on the dice. You need to get that or under to succeed. So it makes sense to always use that. So you roll a D12. At the same time, you also roll a D6. And this is known as the Statham die. And if at any point the numbers match, and it says this in the rules, it's my favorite thing I've ever seen. It goes, Jason does something unexpected. So as a DM, you hear that and you go, oh no, it matches. And you go, well, watch me ruin all of your plans. Like we've had Jason skydiving off the things, having a crying fit, eating other people's food. It gives you permission to do the worst East London accent ever, which as someone who doesn't do accents very well, it's my favourite game to play because I get to just have a lot of fun whilst everyone else has to fix my problems. It's just I love it.
That feels like it's almost a role reversal of the GM player relationship.
Yeah,
which is fantastic.
I think if you have a game night and you're like, you know what, I want to have some fun and everyone gets in on it because obviously you're all playing Entourage and you want to make sure Jason is happy. That is the main goal of it, and people will fall over themselves to make sure he is happy. And you could just be there going, now, sod this. I wanted to go to the Tate. Where's my scuba bus? You know, or anything like that. And they have to. But it sounds like again, like he says, like it's like DM versus thing. Not for the podcast, but I played it with two of my friends. It was just two of us. It was only three of us, and we ended up at the Prince Charles Cinema in London, and we were just arguing with the box office because they wouldn't let me in to see like a Mamma Mia the musical version or whatever. And I just remember we were just there. Just I had to stop because we're all on Zoom. Stop because we were crying, laughing about how fucking ludicrous this was. Like me demanding to go see Mamma Mia at the Prince Charles. And yeah, so that dice mechanic, which allows you to do something unexpected, the scene player's face go, no! And you're like, yes, absolutely, 100%. That is my favorite mechanic.
That's incredible. I'm going to wrap this up in a moment, but are there any final kind of words of wisdom that you'd like to pass on to potential GMs, DMs, and or players?
I'd say the big reason I started doing this podcast was because I wanted to have a go at GMing that wasn't something that was D&D because I was so worried about running a game and people going, that's not right. No, and I think we always have those backseat DMs in D&D games because that is currently the most popular one. My advice is to pick a game nobody wants. Nobody wants to play and you go, we're playing it. No. pick a game that you like the concept of and go, hey, one shot, let's do it. have fun with it. Like, again, I've said like Grant Howitt ones are great for that idea, but anything like that you can do it in a session, because the big thing about it is that even if you get the rules wrong, nobody else knows it, because they're not as versed in it as in D&D, and actually they'll gain a lot out of it. Again, if you get the quick start rules or anything like that, it is just straightforward, and I highly encourage it, because I know we get to a point where there's people who are forever DMs, and all they want to do is play and try new systems. Just try it out with something completely different. It doesn't have to be D&D. It could be absolutely anything, and you gain so much more out of it as a result. So, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being with us, Fiona.
Thank you for listening to me ramble.
Can you let people know where they can find you?
Absolutely. So you can find What Am I Rolling on its own website, which is a shocker. Thank you, Squarespace, I'll say. So that's wairpodcast.com. But you can also find it wherever you listen to podcasts, whether you're an Apple podcast or, as I call it, iTunes still, because I'm one of those old people.
Oh, the days.
I know, right? Spotify, Google Podcasts is a thing as well.
That is a thing.
I know. It's weird. So anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find it there. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at WAIR_podcast. But if you're like, Fiona, you've talked about all these RPGs, but all I want to hear about is D&D and the lore behind it. And I'm like, I know, because it's a bit more successful.
I know your needs.
I know your needs. I also run, I'm a co-host, of the DM's Book Club, which is a weekly book club podcast, which talks about some Dungeons & Dragons and how we can include it in our role-playing campaigns, which don't have to be D&D related, I'd say. And you can find that on Twitter as well, at the DM's Book Club, all lower caps all together. And you can find that, again, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. And have a listen to them. Give me constructive feedback like my mum does. Totally cool with it. But like, and who are you? Nah. So,
no, you're not my mum.
You're not my mum. She says a kiss at the end of her feedback. So.
You don't ask for kisses from strangers.
No, good point. But yes, that's where you can find all those things. And I'm on Twitter as well at FKTH, and on Instagram at Unspeakably Fiona. They're private, but if you're interested in me ranting about work, please feel free to add me on that, or see a picture of a day of me going, I had a rubbish day. But RPGs are great, so you feel free to follow those. So.
You can, of course, follow Realms of Peril and Glory at Realms Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You are on the feed right now, so there is absolutely no need for you to go there. You can follow myself personally at ZackFG on Twitter. That's ZackFG. You can get Realms of Peril and Glory merch, as I am wearing today.
I was admiring.
By happenstance. This arrived yesterday in the post, and I was like, well, I'm going to wear it. And you can check the link in the podcast description for that. There's some really cool designs, and I would highly recommend. I think that's all I've got. Oh yeah, I should probably plug the Patreon. Patreon.com/lightandtragic, where you can get ad-free listening, bonus shows, and probably other stuff.
All gold, all gold.
It's all gold. Everything is gold. And I believe coming up around the time that this is going to come out is we did a Dead Channel game with James Barbarossa, Maddie Searle, and Laura Gerling. So you can check that out too.
Another Grant Howitt one. That's great.
We just basically, Grant Howitt's back catalog. It's like, okay, and now we mine this for content.
Yeah. Again, it is easy, quick start. Like, and Grant is so lovely. I highly recommend Goblin Quest if you have a chance, because there's so many different versions of that one. The Sean Bean Quest version, where you all play Sean Bean. I die every time I play it. It's so much fun. But yes, absolutely, Grant Howitt's stuff is great.
Amazing. Thank you for tuning in, guys, and we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.